Hi, I'm Gary from Stonyfield, the organic yogurt company. Do you know what that certified organic label on your food really means? Learn all about that label and why organic is worth it at stonyfield.com. We're proud to be making organic yogurt and honored to support living on Earth, and hope you will too. Donate at loe.org.
Well, in the 20th century, it was the Northwest Territories of Canada that was gold country. A king's ransom was taken from a dozen gold mines in the remote region, but none was bigger than the giant mine. It was a bonanza. For more than half a century, miners dug deep into the ground in search of veins of gold. But all that glitters at giant mine came with a deadly byproduct, arsenic trioxide. The mine was closed in 2004, but the arsenic will be a problem forever. Dr. Joan Kuyak investigated the arsenic pollution at Giant Mine for the environmental group Mining Watch Canada. Dr. Kuyak, welcome.
Thank you.
So a lot of people got very rich on this giant mine, 8 million ounces of gold. I did some math. That'd be about $13 billion today.
I wouldn't say a lot of people got really rich on it, actually. I think a few people got really rich on it. And for the people whose land it was on, the Yellowknives Dene First Nation, they basically got nothing out of it at all.
Well, I guess they got a lot of arsenic because this thing, in extracting the gold, they wound up with about 250,000 tons.
Yeah, they did. And there's arsenic all over the surface, too, which has changed the groundwater and the soils. From 1946, when the mine opened, until 1951, when it was finally recognized that some children had died from drinking meltwater from the snow. They just pumped the stuff straight out the stack. And so it spread all over the area. And after that, they introduced a bag house, as they call it, to capture the arsenic trioxide. They were captured as powder, and then they were blown underground into the drifts and shafts of the giant mine. And, of course, there is some leakage starting to happen. This mine goes under the town of Yellowknife and under parts of Great Slave Lake.
Great Slave Lake is what, the fifth largest lake in North America, I think?
I believe so, yeah.
So some of this arsenic seems to be leaking out. How do you keep it down underground?
So they've come up with a plan, which isn't a solution, but it's an interim measure, to create a block of permafrost around and through where the arsenic is stored, and then maintaining that frozen block forever or until some solution is found.
It's the same kind of technology they use to make like ice rinks, right?
Yeah, basically.
But it's got to be expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive. The price that they're talking about now is $500 million, but I'm pretty sure it'll be $1 billion before they're done. And when you're depending on permafrost, climate change becomes a huge issue.
The Canadian government is going to have to come up with the money, but if this is a problem that lasts forever, who's going to guarantee that the government's going to be around forever?
Well, we know it won't be. I mean, historically, you know, the kind of civilizations we've built have only been around for 5,000 years, so it's highly unlikely that anything that resembles what we have now will be there 5,000 years from now. And there are places that have been struggling with this, one of them being the Office of Legacy Management of your Department of Energy, which is having to deal with nuclear sites. But we have no real experience with this. There's a lot of really big questions about markers. When they were designing the Waste Isolation Pilot Project in New Mexico, they had panels of science fiction writers and archaeologists and others debating on the kinds of markers that should be used so that future generations won't see it as a challenge to disturb the site. But one of the problems is most markers really say, look at me, you know, we're proud of this. This is one that's got to say, get away, stay away, don't touch this, you know, it'll kill you. And that attracts people rather than repels them most of the time.
Well, I'm thinking of the pyramids, you know. They've been around for a couple of thousand years, but they put curses on those to prevent people from raiding the tombs.
Well, it didn't work, did it? The tombs have all been raided. They're crumbling. I think there's always associated with the isolation of these contaminants, a sort of wishful thinking that the next generations will figure out what to do with it, that somehow technology will evolve and they will figure out what to do. The problem is that we've opened Pandora's box. We've created things that we can't control. One of the things you might want to know, Bruce, is that there's in fact 217,000 sites that will require perpetual care in the United States that we know about, and there's probably a lot more.
There are 217,000?
Yeah. Roughly one in four Americans, including 10 million children, live within 4 miles of a toxic waste dump. And we just ignore it. Your culture and ours are the kind that just sort of say, oh, you know, we'll figure it out later. We're get it done people, right? And that means that we often just don't pay attention to the consequences of what we do anywhere.
Well, Professor Kujak, thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Joan Kujak founded the environmental group Mining Watch Canada. Just ahead, the survival of the stupidest, choosing the dumbest but funniest robot on the planet. Keep listening to Living on Earth.